What do you know about your healthcare information? And how would your understanding change as healthcare reform calls for more healthcare information exchanges? Those are the questions for this edition of the Bioethics Channel. Two individuals join us to examine the legal and ethical issues around healthcare exchanges. Jeff Ellis is a partner with Spencer Fain, Britt and Brown Law Firm in Kansas City, Missouri. Glenn McGee is the John B. Francis Chair at the Center for Practical Bioethics. Jeff Ellis, this story actually begins with healthcare reform and its goal to achieve meaningful use of health data. Could you explain that, please?
Well, I think the question here with healthcare reform is that the nation has recognized that the system is pretty broken, and in an attempt to address that, passage of the Affordable Care Act was an attempt to reduce costs but also get efficiency into the system. The fundamental premise of getting efficiency in the system is to have better data upon which to base healthcare decisions and to render healthcare. And all of that is tied to the development of health information technology. Health information technology is very complex. We have data compiled in all kinds of silos in the healthcare system, but those silos don't communicate with one another. And so the attempt is to break down those silos and to get the information so that healthcare can be rendered at the right place, the right time for the person, and to be able to gain efficiency in the system. So that's the basis of it.
So the goals are good, but the implementation is enormously complicated in ways that you touched on in a presentation today before attorneys and others. The current technologies, the time, the realities on the ground, all of those are complicating factors.
Very much so. The deployment of health information technology is enormously expensive to begin with. A lot of that burden is expected to be assumed by physicians, hospitals, and that's a burden that they can't possibly carry. So a lot of incentives have been provided through the Affordable Care Act to try to encourage the adoption of electronic health records and the exchange, which then have the capability of exchanging that information electronically. A lot of the stimulus funding through ARRA, a subpart called the High Tech Act, was designed to give doctors funds to develop their own electronic health record, to give hospitals the same funding, and to also deploy what I call the Geek Squads, the regional extension centers, which are designed to provide the technical expertise to, again, help doctors and hospitals employ the electronic records.
And then another complicating factor is HIPAA and the privacy protection law.
All of this is it done in the context of the realization that we all have an expectation that our healthcare information is ours, it's private, and will be maintained in some private and secure manner. Obviously, the employment of electronic means to exchange that information opens up a whole new possibility of hacking and security issues that are of concern to patients, and rightfully so. They're of concern to patients and their physicians and their hospitals. And so the HIPAA legislation, which was passed several years ago, was designed to assure privacy and security of health information. We need to employ those principles as we deploy health information technology to assure that same privacy and security is maintained.
Glenn McGee, so much potential with healthcare data, but so many ethical challenges. What are we looking at, basically, whenever it comes to the ethical questions?
Well, I think it is important to recognize that this is a Copernican revolution in healthcare. The opportunities to gather the data that Jeff is talking about are as significant an advance in healthcare as you could possibly conjure up. We're talking about being able to look at imagine a football stadium and then imagine adding all the football stadiums together. Imagine looking out your window at Los Angeles from an airplane and then mapping together all the associated information that physicians have gathered about patients across long periods of time, including about their own families and their family histories, and using that to identify risks that are found through other kinds of tests, you know, both the sorts of things that we do with radiation now, MRIs and x-rays and so on, and the sorts of things that we are beginning to do with genetics and genomics. It is impossible to overstate how much medicine will be changed by the capacity to identify the risk factors that each of us faces in our lives, make lifestyle changes, and also to make healthcare planning more affordable, reasonable, rational, coherent. We're looking at an opportunity that's amazing. So, you know, at the same time that we talk about some of the real ethical challenges that are faced by those building health information exchanges, it's critical to see that they are, one, inevitable, and two, that they represent a Copernican revolution for healthcare. So, having said that, ethical challenges here involve both privacy-based questions that I think Jeff described as clearly as I've ever heard anyone about the expectation we all have of our physicians, and we share with physicians things we would never share with any other professional. They are the only professionals that see us naked. That's probably the best metaphor to use to describe it. And they keep information about us that we value so much that we might not want our husbands or wives to know. And yet at the same time, Americans in particular, but people around the world generally, have begun to recognize that physicians and hospitals and drug stores and even drug companies and other organizations are in contact with each other with our information. There are discounts available to people when they are willing to share certain kinds of health information with life insurance companies. You can't even get life insurance without some health information. We recognize that it is a privilege and not a right in the United States to have the highest possible quality healthcare. While there may be a bottom that everyone is entitled to, the sort of emergency ethics, to get the best healthcare, we often have to trade things, including sometimes our privacy. So we all know we're doing it, trading that privacy. But how much of it we're willing to trade is the ethical conundrum here. Apart from privacy, there are also issues here that surround how data will be used, who owns it, who should profit from the use of data that's obtained through public funds, and for what reason? I mean, a lot of people have a knee-jerk response that if their tax dollars are going toward this, well, why in the world should it be poured into drug company profits when, in fact, only through industry is it possible to develop truly personalized medicine and new drugs and so on? And the different states are competitive as they try to sort of get both the first and the best health information. And that's resulted in some kind of rushes to obtain the particular pools of information that you've got. So there's lots and lots of people who are diabetic in New York City or in Kansas. And the rush to get information from certain pools of people can put them at a disadvantage.
Privacy seems to be a common theme here, Jeff. And one of the things you brought up in your presentation today was opting in, opting out, those options for individuals. And then there's a difference between different states. Here in Kansas City, we're on a Kansas and Missouri state line, and then there are national provisions too. So the balancing act is difficult to achieve.
You know, I'm struck by Glenn's description of the balance in the ethical issues. Probably what we're focused on as a society right now is the fact that government has seen the need to reduce cost and to encourage efficiency, and they figure they can do that, or they plan to do that. The vision is to do that through data-driven quality improvements, and that's what Glenn approaches. And so you've actually hit on the very complex balancing act that's sort of a governmental payment system balancing act, and we really as a society have only started to realize the ethical issues that Glenn presents, and I think they're very important that we start bringing them into the conversation. So what it gets back to your question, basically, is that we, I think, as a society, believe that we all have the right to control the very personal data about us. And so the decision then lies with the individual, and we give them the opportunity to decide whether or not this exchange of information electronically being a new, different way which exposes the data in ways that we don't think it's been exposed before, whether or not we want to participate in that, whether or not we think that dream of better quality is really worth the risk that somebody might find out some secret about how we look naked, as Glenn points out. So we rely on the individual to make those decisions. Some states believe, as Kansas does, that it's important to get data in the system so that we can achieve that vision of better quality and better efficiency. And therefore, we give the individual the right to opt out, but we plan on the data being in the system, the electronic system, as the default. But we allow individuals to opt out. In Missouri, it's quite the opposite. The individual has to decide to include their data in the electronic system, and so the default is to keep the information out unless the patient allows it to be in. That presents a very unique problem for the Kansas City metropolitan area, which obviously straddles the state line, and we're going to have providers who practice with have patients on both sides of the line who are going to have to perhaps understand and provide those patients those various options.
Glenn?
It's an interesting, really interesting dilemma, I agree. And there is some experience here in health sector databases that have been created around the world, not so much with Americans, but a little bit. And one of the striking things is that more than anecdotal data suggests that in particular areas like cancer, where the most advanced sector databases have been created and where people are actually getting different treatment as a result of individual institutions' programs, most notably MD Anderson with the massive program underway, people sign up. They all do. Upwards of so close to 100% that in some cases you actually get there. In general, though, when people are asked whether or not they will sign up, in the studies that have been done to date, the numbers vary between 15% and about 40%. So, you know, there have been discussions like this in the world of bioethics about organ transplantation and what can we do to improve the rates at which we are able to recover organs, you know, given family members' involvement and so on. And all kinds of incentives have been offered. You know, we all know about the $300 funeral bonus or opt-ins and opt-outs with driver's licenses and so on. And surprisingly, the donation rates, the best improvements that have been seen with opt-in or opt-outs that are embedded in things like driver's licenses have been around 10%. A huge challenge here is that to get the good data that we have to make this go, we have to have the population say yes. It can't just be a small portion, and more importantly, it can't be a particular educated, you know, portion that comes from one sector of our society, or you really don't have much data and you can't do very much with it, except in the aggregate with other states when it's mixed together, at which point it's diluted and there's all kinds of scientific problems I don't really understand. But I do understand this much. Getting people to be involved is going to be a big problem. And there have been those who have argued that it shouldn't be an option. The reason I think that argument never really had a shot is that there's so much fear in our country, unnecessary, I think, unwarranted fear, but fear that has historical roots about whether you can trust people with your information. And some of it has to do with the fear, you know, somebody might hack into the system, which could happen. It certainly has happened. I mean, when Sony gets hacked, people start to take notice. But it's more than that. It's also that people are afraid that, as is going to happen in health sector databases, their information will be used for programs and projects that they might not approve of or that might have enormous value that they should have been able to capture. And both those are pretty profoundly American sentiments. They're almost core to the American way of thinking. And we're going to have to overcome that. And that means we're going to have to turn to ethics, which is sort of the one area of medicine that works on people's perceptions and thinks about how to improve things like rates of informed consent.
A final question for both of you. I get the impression that few people outside of this room are really paying attention to this. How important is it that everyone pays attention to this because it's their healthcare information? Let's start with you, Jeff.
Well, I think Glenn said it earlier. The changes in healthcare envisioned by the collection of data, the transmission of data electronically, is profound. It is fundamental to the healthcare system as it is performed in this country. It's going to be a profound change. Again, the vision and the promise is lower cost, more efficiency, but more importantly, better healthcare for the entire population. If that dream can be realized, and I think the national consensus is that data-driven research and information to lead to quality is on the horizon. It is in our best interest. Hopefully that education process to the general population will encourage them to trust this system, but insist at the same time that privacy and security measures be robust and in place.
Glenn?
I couldn't agree more. Evidence-based medicine requires evidence. Sherlock Holmes never found a criminal without the clues. You have to be able to approach people and show them what is true in almost all of our lives, that we have all at some point learned something from either our family histories or our own personal histories related to what our physician knew about the last 50 people that he or she saw. We're moving from, you know, anecdotes, and the plural of anecdote is not data, to data. And I think we're going to have to find the right incentives. They're not going to be money. It's probably not going to be, you know, motivational speeches at churches. It's probably going to be helping people understand why their own healthcare is likely to be engaged and improved, and then working with folks to move that forward. But once it's moving, once it's rolling along, the United States, already the world's health leader in terms of developing new drugs, new devices, and new technologies, is doubtless going to be poised to be the leader in the development of the new healthcare that health information exchanges promise.
Jeff Ellis is partner at Spencer Fane Britton Brown in Kansas City, Missouri. Glenn McGee is the John B. Francis Chair at the Center for Practical Bioweapons. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioweapons Channel.